Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Voice of Olympus, I'm proud to bring you Theosophia, Esoteric Studies. Our episode tonight is hosted by Lynn Salomon Maselli, and it's about the ARE Psychic Fair. Greetings and welcome, Lynn. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. And it's great to be with you on Mount Olympus this evening. I'm Lynn Maselli, and I'm the director of the virtual ARE of New York Edgar Cayce Center. And I'm delighted to have with me Leonardo Cassara, who is a psychic and intuitive tarot reader, and Reverend Kevin O'Kane, who is also a psychic. And we're here to talk about a psychic and healing fair that ARE of New York is doing tomorrow, Saturday, April 1st, and a little bit about our work in general. So I'll start by explaining who Edgar Cayce is for those who don't know and what the ARE is. Edgar Cayce was an American psychic and mystic, born in 1887, died in 1945, and he gave over 14,000 psychic readings in his lifetime that were taken down by a stenographer. And he gave other readings that were not taken down. But he did this amazing body of work. Many of his readings were health-related for people whose doctors either didn't know what was wrong or didn't know how to help them. And Edgar Cayce's readings would usually recommend natural treatments for whatever the health issue was. And eventually, the readings started to delve into a variety of other topics, including meditation, prayer, reincarnation, karma and grace, dreams, past lives and ancient cultures, and even inventions, because his clients included people like Thomas Edison, who had a reading or readings from him. There were other famous people who had readings from him as well, Woodrow Wilson, Irving Berlin, George Gershwin. So the Association for Research and Enlightenment, or ARE, is the nonprofit organization that preserves and researches Cayce's readings and makes them available to the public through books, conferences, courses, and so on. I want to clarify that those of us here tonight are from the New York branch of the ARE. The national ARE has its headquarters in Virginia Beach, but the New York branch has a long history going back to Edgar Cayce's lifetime, when some of his important supporters lived in New York, and he visited New York quite often. So ARE of New York offers courses and workshops and study groups on the various topics the Cayce readings talked about, and we offer psychic readings by our talented practitioners. And tomorrow...
All of your guests are here, Lynn, just to let you know.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Tomorrow, April 1st, we're doing an online psychic and healing fair from noon to 5 p.m., and it's free to attend the fair, and there are a series of workshop presentations that are also free. There are also psychic readings, tarot readings, mediumistic readings, and remote healings of various different modalities, and those sessions are 20 minutes for $20. Also, there will be student readings. We do have a psychic skills certification course that we teach. It's a year-long course, and some of the students from that course will be doing readings. Their readings are just $5 for 20 minutes. And a lot of these readings are already booked, but some are still available. So if you're interested in registering for the fair or booking a reading, you can do that on our website, which is www.edgarcaseynyc.org. I'll come back to that and I'll spell it later. So I have three friends here now, all practitioners who will be donating their services at the fair. So I'd like to let them talk a little bit about what they do. So I'm going to start with my friend Leonardo Cassara, who is an intuitive tarot practitioner. And Lenny, can you talk a little bit about
Hello, everybody. I'm Leonardo Cassara, and yes, I had a long run with the ARE in New York. I still am saddened that it had to close. But my background in connection with the ARE developed because when I was very young, I noticed I had an aptitude for intuitive work to begin with. And eventually, as I got older, I wanted to explore that. And then, you know, accidentally I came across a book during my lunch hour, because I was doing a lot of praying and just dealing with life in general. And I felt like I was literally, through divine intervention or angelic intervention, I was literally guided to a book that literally fell off the shelf, you know. And again, I believe in miraculous intervention, and this particular incident was one of those occurrences. And in the middle of that book was an advertisement for the Edgar Cayce Foundation, and of course, that's how it all started. And my initial experiences that I had is what led me to that, because I was getting images, I was getting feelings. Of course, being very young and in my adolescence, it's hard to explain that to people. But after having joined the Edgar Cayce organization is when I then started vehemently involved with their Search for God program. And it was that enabled me to develop my skills, and not only develop them, but hone in on them and use them in responsible ways. So it's taking what may be considered an aptitude and developing that, and that's what the Edgar Cayce Center did for me. And, of course, then I went to Virginia Beach, and I took that course, as Lynn was explaining, some of the students that are going to be participating in the theater tomorrow. I took that course as well. So I got my certification in metaphysics that way. So what I do now is that I do my readings on a freelance basis. I work from home. I have a client base that I have acquired over these many years, and that's what I've been doing. And I tell people whatever they need to know regarding their particular personal readings. So, any questions?
I want to clarify a couple of things that Lenny said.
Sure.
We used to have a physical center in New York City, and
right.
We no longer do. We're now a virtual center.
Mm-hmm.
And the Search for God group, I think we should explain that a little bit. Do you want
mm-hmm.
to explain that, Lenny?
Okay. Well, the Search for God group came about, from what I recall, and when Edgar Cayce was alive, people were having questions about, you know, eternity, heaven. They were having questions that had, you know, more to do with the world in general as opposed to their own personal concerns. And that's what led to the beginning of this work that Edgar Cayce compiled, and he actually had textbooks that led to this kind of study. And that's what I was initially drawn to. So that's my personal experience on how I connected with the Search for God work. And, of course, it's done in a group setting. People read, like, one or two lines from the textbook that Edgar Cayce provided, and then we have a discussion on that. So it's not something that is done quickly. It's done over many years.
Yeah, I'd like to say a little bit more about that.
Sure.
There was a group that formed around Edgar Cayce that wanted to improve their skills of various kinds, psychic skills, healing
mm-hmm.
skills, and they asked him for a series of readings for readings. And initially, they didn't really expect to work together as a group. They formed a group to ask questions, but they didn't. They were told through the readings that they were to work together as a group, and that they were going to write this book, and that this book was going to affect generations to come. And so they had this series of readings from Cayce, which were lessons in spiritual development. And then they took their personal experiences with those readings and the readings themselves and wrote the book that's called Search for God, that Lenny's calling a textbook.
Yes.
But it's not like
right.
when you say textbook, you picture some big fat
right. You
big
know,
fat
the
poem.
Thing is, that's how some of us in the group utilized it.
But there's actually two little books, a Search for God book.
Right, exactly. There's three levels.
So there are people all over the world in these little groups, and now there are also online groups. So I don't want to go into that in too much detail, but I just thought we better explain that.
Right, and the reason why I mentioned it is because that's what made me develop into what I am now. See, it's all the information that I learned through the Edgar Cayce organization that enabled me to be a better me and to grow on many different levels. It's not like I'm literally copying and doing what Edgar Cayce did, or anybody for that matter. It's the ability to take these intuition and make it produce the best in myself. So therefore, I can be of help to others. And again, that's what I do when I give a reading.
And that's what the Casey readings said, was that the best way to develop psychic skills was to develop yourself spiritually, and the and various kinds of skills just kind of come naturally. Now, there also are exercises and things that you can do, but the spiritual development is a major factor in these skills blossoming.
Correct. And I have personal experience in that area.
I, with the Search for God books, I'm just going to say one more thing about it.
Sure.
George Bernard Shaw was asked once what he thought of Christianity. And he said, well, he thought it was a great idea and somebody ought to try it sometime. And to me, the Search for God books are kind of like trying it, actually trying to do it, which is different from just talking about it.
Correct.
Great. Okay, so... I'd like to introduce Anton Barashi, who is a bioenergetic teacher and healer, and let Anton talk a little bit about what he does. He also does readings, but tonight we're going to talk mostly about the healing work. Anton?
Hi. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. I'm happy to be with you tonight. And besides... touting the fair we're going to have tomorrow to introduce a little bit of knowledge about bioenergetic healing. Bioenergy healing is probably the Western term for medical qigong, which would be a part of traditional Chinese medicine. And this type of healing, or laying of the hands, as it's called in some tradition, it has a long, long history, maybe 5,000 years or so that we know of it, at least from the Chinese end. It's a non-medicated way of stimulating a person's own immune system in the direction pointed by the medical diagnosis. The reason why this healing works is probably because of two principles. The first one would be that every human being develops, grows within the body of another person. All of you were in your mommy's tummy at some point, and we were like a zygote floating in amniotic fluid. There was no gravity. You were warmed, fed, breathed, pooped, everything done for you. And that's the space in which you grew organs or limbs. And at the cell level, there is still a memory of that in all of us. The other principle is that all recuperation, all healing occurs when you are in an unconscious state, when you're sleeping. Essentially, if I'm to joke, all you can do to yourself from the time you wake up until you go to sleep is to make yourself tired, because the effect that soul and spirit have over the physical and energetic body is to consume it. So theoretically, if you could induce a state in a person resembling sleep that evokes the memory of being taken care of completely, you induce healing. Of course, there is more technique, and in my travels, I apprenticed with about 12 masters, and each one had a different technique, and they all said to me the same thing. You do it this way. This is how I learned from my master, and this is what I'm teaching you. Don't tell me anything about the other thing you know, because I'm not going to answer to that. And after a few years, I realized that all those methods have things in common. And in New York, you have to be fast. So I slowly started to use various techniques from various modalities, putting together a speedy package in which you can improve the health of a person within a half an hour. And I don't know exactly how far the improvement goes, and I don't know how long it lasts, but improvement is the norm. And at present, besides the fact that I'm working in two physicians' offices, I work in Manhattan and in Long Island, in Huntington, Long Island, with Dr. Pinalo Giudici and Dr. Carrero. And I also have a teaching practice, and The Edgar Cayce Center has been gracious enough to, to sponsor those teachings, and we have done it four times so far. And probably we're going to do it again in the spring, so at some point we'll set it up. And it's an intensive course that teaches everyone how you can improve the health of a person in a non-medicated way in a very short time. Bioenergy healing is a good method when you talk about pain reduction, chronic conditions, speeding up recovery after an intervention, and, of course, spiritual development in as much as it means something to different people. About myself, I used to be a senior project manager in financial institution in architectural development, and I probably in my career I did something like, 5 million square feet of commercial space, and maybe I had a budget of $750 million. But at some point from stress, I got very, very sick. And I had a bunch of ailments, asthma, arthritis, acid reflux, heartache. I had digestive disorder, sleep disorder, prostate problems, all on top, one on top of the other. And I would take pills and bravely forge forward. But then stress got very, even more so when the bank I was working sold to HSBC, and they made it leaner 30% before the handover. So eventually I found a job by the hour at Morgan Stanley. And the Argentinian architect next to me told me one day, why don't you go see this guy? That's how I saw the first energy healer in my life. I didn't understand the big thing he did with his hands, but he knew things about me that I didn't tell him. And later on, I found a permanent job with AIG on Wall Street, and the guy next to me was Chinese. And he said to me one day that his good health is due to him practicing Qigong. So I asked him to show me. And that was my introduction. I never let go. And not only that, I regarded health, I also ended up changing my career as the, architecture at some point told me I'm too old for them. And I've been practicing for the past 20 years. So that's kind of my story. And what we're going to do tomorrow would be a little short healing session, about 20 minutes, addressing the immediate concerns, if some physical, some emotional, some spiritual.
And you're going to be doing remote sessions tomorrow, so can you talk a little bit about how that works?
Yes, it works. I mean, if I was to make a joke, I would say just like the telephone works now. Humans are immersed into the biofield of the earth. The life field is penetrating into everything that has, proliferation, assimilation, and even more sensation and intent. So we are enmeshed into the biosphere and symbiotic with the plant kingdom. We inhale the air and we inhale the oxygen, and we exhale carbon dioxide. And besides the fact that we're enmeshed in that, we also carry a microbiome, about 2 kilos of it. In other words, we have a bunch of bacteria and, living things into your gut that makes you somewhat of a zoo, but you don't think about it normally. Now, on top of it, life is contiguous. What makes birds, for example, decide when to make their nests at a certain time, or migration of the birds? They feel it. And if you can, through exercise, get a working knowledge of that field, whatever I do at my end will reflect at your end, conducted by intention, focus, and dialing the signature of the person that you're dealing with within yourself. you know, is this very strange phenomenon that if you look at someone outside you, you will see them with your senses, with your eyes. At the same time, within yourself, you will have the presence of that person in a feeling form. And that is the one with which you can connect directly to the person at long distance. Of course, a treatment at long distance consists of three parts. The first one will be cleaning or purification. The second one will be a transfusion of energy, directing the energy such that it enters into the energetic body of the person, not only through the air they breathe, food, and light, but also through a so to speak, transfusion that is initiated by the healer. And I have to mention, the energy is not the healer's. The energy grows grass outside the window and moves clouds. It's divine energy. We just have some control over it, the same way you have control over matter. Like you take mud, make bricks, and then you make a cathedral. You improve the original matter. So while you dial in, there is a possibility of forming a connection to the person and manipulating or essentially catalyzing the connection in between the person and the divine, because that's where all healing resides. I don't know if I was very articulate, but I hope so.
Well, that was an interesting way to put it. When you're talking about a transfusion, you're of course talking about a transfusion of energy, we're not talking about blood transfusions here.
It's all remote, you know, it would be no sense. It's an energetic transfusion. In other words, the person is able to absorb more of the environmental energy through other channels that are facilitated by the healer. The system of channels and meridian that you see in Chinese medicine is well and alive and usable, plus some other formations like the chakra system or the causal body. And I could go into detail, but I don't think this is the moment to do so.
And when you talk about dialing into the person, that's done through intention, through your, as you said, like feeling the person inside yourself, having a sense of who they are.
Yes, that's very well put. In fact, this occurs when you say the name of a person. So I usually explain to my students what is the signature of a person that you could access. I say, do you know somebody for 20 years? And they say yes. And then I say, when you say the name of that person, don't you have in a split second a signature of the person arising in you, condensing the 20 years you know them into a split second? And that is the miracle of the signature, or the sanctitude of the name. It would call the presence of the person within yourself.
That's a great way to put it. Thank you, Anton. And then the third person we have here, and I want to say that it happens that all of the practitioners here with us tonight are men, but most of our psychic readers are women, but the three gentlemen are here who are here tonight were available and willing and had interesting things to say. So the third person is Kevin O'Kane, who does psychic and mediumistic readings, and he is actually joining us from Ecuador. He's on the phone from Ecuador. Kevin, do you want to talk about
Hello.
How you came to do what you do?
Of course. Years ago, I used to have a really bad temper. Now, we're talking back in my 30s, and I'm in my 60s now, so it's a while ago. I had a bad temper, so I decided hypnosis was probably the way to go. I had never at that point heard of Edgar Cayce. But I called a hypnotist, and he was a BS artist. And he told me, my sessions cost $700 a piece, but I'm having a class this weekend for only $395. So guess what? I went to the class, and I fell in love with hypnosis. And I did that for years and years before I ever did any psychic stuff. And then I started getting inklings, knowledge about my hypnosis clients. And I would be able to not only direct them in their past lives, but also tell them things about themselves in their past lives and in their present lives that seemed to help them. And then I read an autobiography of Edgar Cayce called There Is a River. My uncle, excuse me, my uncle had it for about 5 years. He didn't read it. He gave it to my mother. My mother had it for about 5 years. She didn't read it. She gave it to me. I had it for several years. And one day I'm just looking for a book to read. I had over 1,000 books, so I don't know why I grabbed this one. And I grabbed There Is a River. And all of a sudden, the whole world opened up for me. And I realized everything, that we're all one, which is one reason, or the main reason, I think, why we can read for each other, why we can heal for each other, and stuff like that. It's like my energy is your energy is mine. So I'm not doing anything for you or to you. I'm doing it in myself. And because I'm you, you're getting better. So when I started working with the ARE, which the day after I read There Is a River, I called up the ARE in Virginia Beach, and I said, I want to be involved. And they told me a center had just opened up that month in Manhattan. I called Lynn, made an appointment to come to see her, and then I was there for 25 years. And during that time, I became a reader. I realized my ability to do that. And the rest, I guess, is history.
A reader and a healer and a past life regression
hypnotherapist. Yeah. Well, those things, too. I studied at where did I study? Okay. Oh, gosh, now I forget where I studied. I studied upstate New York, spiritualist community, Lilydale, that's it.
Yes.
I studied at Lilydale, and one of the things I found out there that I still believe very, very heartily is that the same energy is used to read for somebody, to be a medium calling in spirits from the other side, as it were, or healing. It's the same energy. It just depends how you use it. It's not that I have different gifts, like healing and hypnosis and reading. No, it's that I use it in different ways. And it's all the same energy. I'm sorry, did somebody want to say something?
I was going to say it's all part of the same thing.
Exactly, that's right. That's right. And Cayce showed us that too. It's all one. We're all one. And because of that, we can connect with each other. And because of that, we can call in people supposedly from the other side. Because of that, we can do past life regressions, because there's no real such thing as time. There's no real such thing as distance, you know. That's why distance healings can work just as wonderfully as in-person healings. That's why we can read for people. It's all connected, and it's all wonderful. There, I'll get off my soapbox now.
Well, that's what Cayce would say. He would say it's all connected. We had a conversation, I heard you talking recently about also working with discarnate spirits that basically what people would call ghosts, discarnate spirits that haven't found their way to the light, to where they're supposed to go.
That's a little different topic.
But do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's an interesting...
Of course, definitely. There are many souls on this planet that when they pass, they're not finished. Or perhaps even they're maybe afraid of going to the other side, as it were. You know, what Casey called the God's other door. You know, so they stay here. And the longer they stay here, the less their brain works, the less their mind works. And after a while, they forget the reason that they stayed. But they do have the emotion. So, for instance, if they were staying to get back at somebody, they have the emotion of anger, and it's just getting bigger and bigger, but they don't have the memory of why they're angry. Or the emotion of shame, that's very, very common. Even I had that once. In one life, I got killed and left my four-year-old child by being murdered. And I was so ashamed to have left the child that I stayed hidden up in a tree for that child's entire life. You know, it's so common. People who die, say, for instance, in car crashes or some other way that they die quickly, they may stay also. Very often they'll get up from the ground, leave their body on the ground, not knowing it's there, and walk home and never understand why the people at home aren't talking to them or why they can't eat anymore. So it's a really interesting thing. And for about 10 or 15 years, I used to send those spirits back to the other side. You know, I would talk to them and get them to agree to go. And Charles Julian taught us that there are literally hundreds of thousands, if not even millions, of these souls. And a lot of them are ancient soldiers that are staying back because, one, they didn't know they died, or two, they're very ashamed of what they did. Or even three, and I found this in only one soul once, because he wants to continue killing people.
Ugh. Well, that's not very enlightened. And so So what is tell me a little bit about the conversation that you have with these beings, or that you had when you were trying to send them to the light.
Well, it's really funny, but they usually don't know that they're dead. But very often they are attracted by someone's light. You know, each of us has a light that is our energy glowing, and they're attracted by the light. If the more advanced they are, the higher the level of light that they're attracted by. And so they walk around, as it were, with that person, in that person's body, sort of, not necessarily telling that person what to do, but just being there. And the first thing I would say is, you know, I would talk to them, like introduce myself and you know, tell them that they are no longer living. And, of course, that would freak them out. And then I would say, well, look at your body. And if they were a man and they are in a woman's body, that really freaks them out. they look down and they see breasts and they're like, oh, my God, what's going on? You know. But then often, if they have family and it's been a while, it's rather easy to get them to go because you just call in family from the other side. and you say, they've been missing you so much. They want you to be with them. Look at them. They're crying. They're happy to see you. Would you like to go with them into the light? You will be with them and with their love, and you will be taken care of. And also, you won't be lonely anymore, because remember, these people have no one to talk to on Earth anymore. So they go generally. The difficult ones are the ones who stay for negative reasons, you know, wanting to get back at somebody or wanting to continue being a drug addict or continue being an alcoholic. And they stay just to fulfill those needs, which they can never do, by the way. Once you pass over and no longer have a body, you can't feel the drugs. You can't feel the alcohol. But the person they're with often becomes an alcoholic or a drug addict. So that's interesting. And they can stop being an alcoholic or drug addict as soon as the entity leaves. But they're usually very hard to send away, because they have a reason for being here that is 100% selfish. They know they're dead, and they are like, no, I'm not going anywhere because I want to feel what it's like to be stoned again, and I'm going to keep trying. I was with a woman who committed suicide in 1920 by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and she was with a man who, she was an alcoholic as well as a, excuse me for the words, she was a loose woman. Well, she went to this man who was born in the hospital that they took her body to, and she just liked his light, so she went to him, and so she talked to him ever since he was born, and so he thought it was his own ideas to become an alcoholic and a loose man, I guess you would say, you know. Well, then years later, in the 1980s, he committed suicide. And so he and the woman that committed suicide in the 20s went to his daughter. His daughter was a married woman who had children. She was a churchgoer. She was a very nice woman. Everybody liked her. All of a sudden, she left her husband, left her kids, became a loose woman, became an alcoholic. And so one of my friends said to me, told me about that story, about what happened to the woman. And she said, Kevin, see if you can help. I said, come on, I can't do anything. And then I just put myself into trance and realized all of these things happening. So I talked to the woman from the 1920s and got her to go away, which was not easy. Talked to the father, which once the woman from the 20s was gone, he was no longer being influenced by her. So he was so apologetic for hurting his daughter that he went away very easily. Once both of those people went away, within days, the woman came back home, stopped being a loose woman, stopped drinking alcohol.
That is an amazing story. I think you've told me that before, but not in that much detail. I didn't really plan on going into this, but since we have time, I thought it was something that you had mentioned recently and that was intriguing to me. So, Kev and Leonardo are both practitioners in our psychic portal, which is basically, if you go to our website, which I'll give you that information again a little further along, there's a tab there that says portal, and if you go on to that tab, there are a group of psychics who do different kinds of readings, and they're all available and can be booked through the portal. So Kevin is one of those practitioners, and Leonardo is one of those practitioners, and we're planning on getting a healing portal going too, so that Anton would also be reachable through our website. But we are planning to do another course with Anton, teaching bioenergetic healing. And he used to teach the bioenergetic healing hands-on with you know, the people all together in a room. But last time, because the pandemic was happening, we experimented with doing that online through Zoom, except at the very end, he had people connect with him in person. But the course was mostly taught online, and one of the interesting things about that was that we're based in New York, and most of our community is in New York. But Anton had people in the course. You had somebody from Finland, right, Anton?
Yes, correct. Someone from Finland. I had from England, Switzerland. You have to adjust the time a little bit because of the time differential, but it's possible. California is 3 hours away. And we had people from other areas in the States.
So, the pandemic was certainly a terrible tragedy for a lot of people, but perhaps the upside of it was that we began to do things remotely. We had actually started doing some things online, some webinars online before the pandemic hit, but then we basically moved to entirely online, and that opened us up to, we've had people from Canada, we've had someone from Mexico City in one of our programs, we've had people from all over the United States, and that's kind of been the upside of the very troubling circumstances of the pandemic. And it's allowed us to really expand our community a great deal. So we're kind of getting toward the end of our time. Is there anything that any of you three gentlemen want to share before we go back to talking about the fair?
Lynn, I thought maybe the audience might like to hear one of my stories that happened to me when I was very young regarding a psychic event that occurred.
Yeah, I think we have time for that if it's not too long. Yeah.
Right. I know how to make things condensed. Yes, you learn after a while. Well, there was an incident when I was very, very young. I think I was about maybe 7 or 8 years old, and I was aware of these gifts that I was becoming privy to at a very young age. I just didn't know how to describe it or normally explain it in detail, because I wasn't my language wasn't fully developed. But for those out there, I was born in Italy, and I really didn't learn how to speak English until I was a little older. In any case, that was a challenge. But anyway, this particular incident is when my parents had some guests coming over, some aunts and uncles, and they were talking about my Uncle Joseph, who was celebrating his first year wedding anniversary in the Poconos. And since he wasn't there celebrating his anniversary, my mother said, take out a picture of Uncle Joseph from the drawer and show the company. And so I did that. So then when they were done looking at it, my mother told me to put it away. But then when I was handed the photo, my eyes got fixated on the photo of my Uncle Joseph, and I couldn't move my eyes away from the photo. I was fixated on it as if it's like some higher message was telling me, here, you have to look at this, and we're not going to let you move your eyes or face away from it. So therefore, that photograph of my Uncle Joseph was like the way I use a tarot card now. And the immediate feeling I got that rushed over me, literally, I felt energy moving in my body, going to my brain, making me realize and see that my Uncle Joseph has passed away and is now in heaven. So because I was taking a long time putting the photograph away, my mother just came over to me and pulled it out of my hand and said, do I have to do everything? And I said, Uncle Joseph is in heaven. And that's all I said. And she just dismissed it altogether. And the following day is when we heard that he passed away in a skiing accident in the Poconos.
Wow.
So that's just one example.
It seems pretty common that people who are psychic from their youth, which usually, well, Edgar Cayce says we're all psychic, but people who are
right.
having psychic experiences from their youth often have difficulty talking to other people about it because other people will often tell them that they're not really experiencing what they're experiencing and that it's not real and that, you know, it basically encouraged them not to talk about it, not to think about
right.
it, not to do it.
Right. Well, I immediately got the feeling that my mother didn't want to know the truth.
And that's probably pretty common as well.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So as Cayce says, Edgar Cayce's reading said, we're basically all psychic,
mm-hmm.
but... like any other ability, you know, the ability to sing or the ability to
right. and
do
any
art
or
anything else.
Yeah.
Some people have more than others, and some are more open to it because mm-hmm. if you're taught that something doesn't exist, and if you're told that your impressions are wrong or and you know you're maybe crazy for having them,
right, exactly.
then you will tend to repress that and
right.
you know suppress that and not.
Right.
Not
well,
develop
I was
it.
Aware. I was aware of that suppressing quality, but I did not suppress it in my own mind. I just didn't make it public.
So it was kind of a secret.
It was kind of a secret until I was older, and therefore I could had the ability to explain it better. And at that point, then I wasn't afraid to admit it.
And that's one of the things I think that the Edgar Cayce community. Has done for a lot of people that they suddenly find that they're among people who can talk to them, who they can talk to about the things they've been experiencing, which, you know, so many other people will say, you know, that's a lot of hooey.
Exactly.
They can, right.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with conditioning and upbringing and environment, all those things mm-hmm. that, contribute to whatever any outcome is.
Right. The lucky people, in terms of psychics, the lucky ones are the ones who have psychic ability in their family going back for generations, and it's
correct.
Accepted and it's talked about, and it's you know it's easier for them because
right.
you know they don't have to get through this
right.
Resistance to talk about it.
Right. Right. And even in some case, and I even done research about my own family's background, and I have found out that my grandmother, which is my mother's mother. Had this ability, and it was kept extremely suppressed because I had the privilege of knowing my mother's grandmother, which is my mother Josephine, my grandmother Josephine, I should say. And I knew her only for a short period of time. And for some reason, she was never mocking me about whenever I spoke of something that my parents didn't understand. My grandmother Josephine always encouraged me. And then I found out years later doing my own readings and my own hypnosis regressions and finding out about my grandmother, and I picked up that she had this ability and she really did not use it professionally.
So that's probably somewhat, in some ways that's a bit similar to Edgar Cayce because he had extraordinary abilities in terms of psychic skills, but he did have a grandfather who was able, they said about his grandfather, that his grandfather was able to make a broom dance without touching it, that he was able
right.
to make it move without touching it. So apparently it ran in his family as well. But Edgar Cayce says that that psychic ability is an aspect, a quality of the soul.
Correct.
And therefore, we all have it, and
right.
you know,
it's
although
a matter
we may have it,
yeah,
we may have it to varying levels,
right.
and we may not have ever developed it, but it is there, and
correct.
And I think most people have experienced it in some part of their lives. You know, the that thing where you think about somebody and they and suddenly the phone rings and it's that person.
Oh, of course, yes. It's a matter of utilizing any ability. People can have various, various different abilities, but if it doesn't get used, it becomes dormant.
Right. So that's one of the things that ARE of New York and the National ARE offers to people, as well as courses and classes. There's the fellowships. There's the you know,
exactly.
the element of like-minded individuals. And the fair that we're doing, there is a some opportunity for socializing there. Not a lot, but there is some opportunity for socializing.
Noise on the line.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise going on. Yeah, that's better. So again, this fair is tomorrow, and it is from noon till 5. And we have a variety of different services being offered. Some people doing tarot readings, some people doing mediumistic type readings, some people doing what they call angel readings. Some people doing animal communication, or at least one person doing animal communication. And then there are different healers who work differently. One is a spiritual healer who just had this ability that he was born with. And Anton is highly trained in and has studied all kinds of modalities to bring out his healing ability. And we have Peter Goldbeck, who it would have been fun to have him here tonight because his healing abilities and psychic abilities first blossomed after he was hit by lightning,
mm-hmm.
Which he calls, you know, nature's attunement.
Mm-hmm.
But then he did also study. So we have different kinds of healing services being offered. And we have a variety of different kinds of readings being offered. And there are free presentations that go on throughout the day. All of this is online. One of the presentations is a woman who did not know she was a psychic, did not know she was a medium, was engaged to a man who died suddenly, and after a little while she realized that he was communicating to her. And at first she rejected that, as we've been talking about, but then she eventually had to acknowledge that she was communicating with him. And so her talk is called Love Beyond the Veil. And one of the talks is about etheric cords, which is the idea that when we feel connected to something, there is kind of like an etheric cord that connects us to places, to people, to pets, to you know, buildings. And sometimes those are wonderful, and sometimes they're not. Sometimes you feel connected to something that you would really like to leave behind. And so she's going to be talking about those cords and what you can do about them if you're not happy with them. So we have some really interesting topics. And again, we do have the readings, which are $20 for 20 minutes with the regular practitioners and $5 with our student readers for 20 minutes. But the rest of it is free. The presentations and so forth are all free. So I'm going to tell you how you can connect with this fair again. If you're interested in registering for the fair or booking a reading, you can do that on our website, which is www.edgarcaseynyc.org. But I'm going to spell that because a lot of people think that Casey is spelled differently. It's not spelled like Casey at the bat. So this is how it is. It's www.edgarcaycenyc.org. And if you go to that website, you'll find there's kind of a slideshow on the home page. And if you wait long enough, the slides change. And one of them is about the psychic and healing fair. And if you click on that, that will take you through to the page about that, and you can look at the various different services that are offered and the various different talks that are offered. And if you're not available tomorrow, or if the reader that you are drawn to is already booked, fully booked, there's also our psychic portal, which you can click on. There's a tab that just says portal, and you can click on that and see all of the psychic readers who are working with us and book an appointment or book a reading or session with them. So that's basically what we're offering right now. And Anton, Leonard, Kev, is there anything that you'd like to say before we finish up?
No, not really. I just want to thank you very much and thank Hercules for this opportunity.
Yes, I thank you as well for the same reason.
And thank
all right,
you all
see you
of
at the fair.
Okay.
See
you at the fair.
Fair.
I want to thank all of you, Kev and Anton and Leonardo, for joining me tonight. And, yes, we hope to see you all at the fair. And thank you, Hercules, for this opportunity.
Very good.
And thank you, Lynn, and thank you all for an informative, interesting, and a very thought-provoking show. Thanks also
great.
To our wonderful listeners, whether they called in and they patiently waited in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out on demand. And I wish you great success with your psychic fair, and I wish I could attend, but alas, I cannot. So I'll hear about it afterwards.
Okay. Thank you,
Hercules. If you don't come, we're going to haunt you.
Thank you, everyone. This has been
thank
great.
You.
Yes.
Good night.
Thank you, Lynn. Good night.
Good night. Good night.